Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
What disgusts you, Julie? What do you regularly encounter in the world around you that sets off the disgust center of your brain?
I was thinking about this, and for me, it's, I do have some visual disgust. Like, for instance, if I watch Clockwork Orange, and I see the scene where they're peeling back his eyes, and they've got the little hooks right on the lids of his eyes, that just disgusts me. It makes my stomach turn. Mm-hmm. Somehow, something about eyes really... And poking at eyes is disgusting to me. But more than anything, I think smells.
Smells.
Yeah, because it could be just something as, you know, normal as, hey, there's some stinky garbage or cigarette butts. That kind of makes me recoil. What about yourself?
Well, I mean, certainly a bad odor will get to me. But I guess things that seem like unhygienic things often give me the all over. It's like if I'm... if there's somebody on the train and they're coughing without covering their mouth, I'm just kind of like, ugh. Mm-hmm. Or the time I saw the chicken lady on the train. Have I mentioned this before?
I do believe I've heard of the chicken
lady. And she was eating she had a rotisserie chicken that she had been eating on. And it was down to just like the little sort of gray slivers, and she was picking the meat off of it on the train. And then she would touch the pole on the train, and then she would go back to eating her chicken, which just totally freaked me out. I basically had to switch cars at that point. You know, things of that nature where I'm like, this is kind of gross. And the part of my brain is just wanting me to flee for fear of all the diseases rolling off this situation.
Right. It's like you're having this really powerful feeling for a reason, right? Your body, your mind, everything is telling you, like, back away right now. And there's a reason for this, and we're going to talk about that. I asked Jonathan Strickland of TechStuff what disgusted him, and he gave me a very specific answer, that it was maggots emerging from carcasses, because you might mistake the movement under the skin for something else, and then they emerge, and chaos ensues.
Ah. Well, there's a great example of that in the book The Wasp Factory, that actually ends up driving a character insane. That's a Banks book from the guy who did the Culture series.
So look it
up if you want to be disgusted. But why are we disgusted, right? Why does this happen? And where does it occur in nature? Where does it occur in the brain? Why is it such a part of who we are?
Well, Joshua Tiber of VU University, in Amsterdam proposed three domains of disgust.
Okay.
Three separate psychological programs. Yep. Okay, and they all make sense, right? Disease avoidance, which you talked about.
Right. People coughing on the train.
Yep, putting all their chicken juice on the poles.
Mm-hmm.
That just sounded wrong. Mate choice and moral judgment.
Okay. Well, see, like all three of those are rolled up in the chicken lady. Because I'm like, that's gross and potentially going to spread a disease. I really don't want to mate with you.
Mm-hmm.
And morally, I think it's – and also, morally, it's against the rules to eat on the train. What the heck are you doing?
Yeah, it's a little bit reprehensible to sit there and basically, you know, essentially like lick your hands and of the chicken and then just put it all over everything for other people to come upon and transfer to themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though if you touch one of those poles with your bare skin, I mean, you're really asking for it.
You are.
I always hook an arm. That's
yeah.
What I do.
Yeah.
Or wear a glove.
Or just pull your sleeve down.
Yeah. Or
that's
just,
another good
or just fall. Better to fall on the floor than to touch that pole.
Rolling around on that floor is probably a lot better. Apparently, there is a look of disgust that is universal. So when we feel disgusted, this look crosses over our faces. And what it is, and this is according to Paul Ekman of the University of California at San Francisco, the look is a screwing up of our noses and pulling down at the corners of our mouths. You're doing it right now.
Yeah,
you look a little disgusted. And every culture all over the world, this is the look of disgust.
The sort of, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, look. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, you're in another country, you're disgusted by something. Just keep that in mind, that if you happen to be over at someone's home in another country and they're cooking you something and it's maybe not something that you would try at your own home, try not to screw your nose up.
Yeah, because it's something universal. It's not like, in this country, a thumbs up is good, and in this country, it's fighting word, you know, or like,
right.
Or turn, you know, the whole thing, like if you turn your glass upside down in Australia, it means you're challenging everyone in the bar to a fight. But
good to know. Good
well,
to know.
I can't back that up. That's one thing I've heard. Our Australian listeners will sort of thought on that. But
Yeah. Or the soles of your shoes in Egypt, right? That I think
yeah.
I believe that's a put down.
In Thailand, like setting so that your shoe is pointing at somebody.
Yeah.
That's bad, you know. But here, nobody cares.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
You point your shoes all you want. But Charles Darwin actually tackled this subject before in the paper, The Expression of the Emotions in Man and Animals. And he described the face of disgust as if one were expelling some horrible tasting substance from the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been, you know, historical interest in disgust, but as of late, it's actually getting some legs, as you would say, in terms of being studied in earnest. Dr. Valerie Curtis of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine is a disgustologist.
Oh, yeah.
In fact. And she says disgust is in our everyday life. It determines our hygiene behaviors. It determines how close we get to people. It determines who we're going to kiss, who we're going to mate with, who we're going to sit next to. It determines the people that we shun, and that is something that we do a lot of.
Yeah, and you look at the list of things that are typically associated with disgust, and certainly some of the ones we already mentioned are on there. I mean, you know, the basic bodily secretion issues, feces, vomit, sweat, spit, blood, pus, sexual fluids,
mm-hmm.
body parts, wounds, corpses, toenail clippings, decaying food, certain living creatures like the maggots, like lice, like
yep.
worms, rats, some people dogs and cats, which are to each their own, and then individuals who are ill, the diseased.
Right. Again, there's that visual of, that person is someone I need to back away from. And the body parts universals list that you're talking about, toenail clippings came up.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting because I feel the same way. And I always attributed it to being some sort of weird idea that I had that someone might take my toenail clippings and cast a spell against me.
Exactly. I mean, that's the old magic of be careful with your hair, stuff into the side of you. Know,
right.
Don't let anybody get a hold of your brush or they could cast magical spells against you.
Right. Yeah, these irrational fears that we have.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting. You know, in the past we've discussed sympathetic magic, and
mm-hmm.
Our attitudes towards disgust are somewhat wrapped up in sympathetic magic. Like the idea that, say, something that has come into contact with something gross is therefore gross, which as a basic physical rule tends to apply. You know, if the fork has been in the toilet, you're not going to eat with the fork. Even if you clean it sometimes, you
right?
Know? I don't
right.
know why the fork
you're always
is in
going
the toilet,
to have this but, yeah. association of the fork in the toilet trying to spear something.
Right. But then our, humans have the ability to really get out, take things and extrapolate them to ridiculous levels. So you end up with situations where you, I mean, this is where we end up with things like the idea that certain individuals are untouchable because they have a particular job in society that that puts them in contact with foul things or foul ideas. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, it ends up becoming a part of this sympathetic magic and the idea that something can be not only befouled, but besmirched, you know.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, too, later, but the cultural aspect of it and what you're talking about in sympathetic magic, because that is really such mm-hmm. an interesting psychological component to this.
Yeah, but back to the physiological. I found an interesting description of this in the book Clean, A History of Personal Hygiene and Purity by Virginia Smith, which I think I've mentioned before. It's just a great book on the history of hygiene. And how hygiene ends up becoming interwoven with these ideas of purity. But she refers to the nervous reflex of disgust and repulsion as a physiological safety net, which I think you know ties in nicely with the disease and mating aspect of this trifecta of repulsion.
Okay. All right. I can see that.
All right. So diving into the brain. Where is this taking place? When I see the chicken lady on the on the train, like what's lighting up? If someone were to strap me into an fMRI or something,
yeah. If we could scan your brain, we would see a lot of activity in the insula and the amygdala, as well as other regions.
And especially the frontal insula.
Mm-hmm.
It's an area of the brain that, in addition to deep seated disgust, you also have things such as addiction is sometimes tied up there as well. So it's not like just the repulsion center of the brain. There have been studies that have shown that people with damage to this portion of the brain were actually able to give up cigarettes instantly.
Huh.
So so there's a lot going on there, but one of the things that is definitely going on there is repulsion.
Yeah, and amygdala, of course, is processing emotions. So
right.
That makes sense that you're seeing the chicken lady on MARTA, the train system, and you're starting to form all of those opinions mm-hmm. and having a very big gut reaction to it.
It's also like if you were to receive a sensual touch from one significant other, that also ends up resonating in the insula. So there's a lot of physical stimuli and sensual stimuli from the world around you. You wind up figuring out what you're supposed to do with it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you actually just brought up someone that you know touching you, because in a lot of these studies, and this is going to sound like a no-duh moment, but of course we find the people that we know less disgusting than the people that we don't know.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because there's a familiarity there, even if that person is truly disgusting.
Right.
but there's less of an opportunity to objectify that person. And maybe on some level you're like, okay, well, they're not maybe the cleanest of people,
mm-hmm.
but they're no threat to me. I know this.
Right.
I know my immune system knows that there's no threat.
Well, here's this one actually came up among some friends. Where do you stand on using a spouse's toothbrush?
Okay. Well, in a situation where it's the only choice, then I'm fine with it.
Okay.
But when I've accidentally done it, or my daughter grabbed my toothbrush actually this morning and I was like, no, which was kind of ridiculous because, certainly, I eat some of her sandwiches, she eats some of mine, and we are all exchanging,
sandwiches
and,
well, that makes you sound a little like birds, but
yeah, we are.
Yeah.
We have a little giant nest. But yeah, and kissing and everything. So. Yeah, all the germs are being passed between one mm-hmm. another.
Well, I found just in the few people I've talked to, like they tend to range. There's some people that are like, yeah, like you're on a trip and you only have one toothbrush in the bag. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
And then other people are like, ugh, absolutely not. One person gets to brush their teeth on that trip kind of a thing.
Well, and it's kind of like my germs, just my germs, okay?
Right.
No one else's germs, which is just silly and funny.
Yeah.
I guess that we just feel really like we've got quite a connection with all of the bacteria on our body, which we've talked about. It's mm-hmm. like, there's tenfold of foreign bacteria to our own cells. So, hey, I guess we start to feel a little bit fuzzy and lovey for our own bacteria. But anyway, let's talk about disgust from an evolutionary standpoint.
Yeah, like what sense does it make evolving? I mean, obviously, the big take home here is avoiding disease.
Mm-hmm.
For an organism to be successful, it needs to not get taken down by predators, but it also has to avoid the ailments that will weaken it, either unto death or into the hands of these predators.
Right. So, I mean, it's makes sense that we would have these sort of signals for us, to visual cues, smell cues that mm-hmm. would make us stop in our tracks and reassess or reevaluate, because this is how we have been so successful as a species, right?
Right.
This ability to step back and evaluate and say, this might be something that would be harmful to me.
Right. We talked about some of this in the Science of Stink, where we were talking about how you'll get hit with a bad smell. And the bad smell will hit you square in the face, and it's your brain's way of saying something's wrong here. This is potentially poisonous or disease-ridden mm-hmm. in some way, shape, or form. So you need to at least think about it before you touch it, if not just completely avoid it entirely.
Yeah, in fact, the New York Times has an article called The Ick Factor, and mm-hmm. in it they talk about how smell causes such a powerful response in the brain that the U.S. Army has been trying to develop a stink bomb with an odor foul enough to be used for riot control, mm-hmm. and that police are very interested in it. So it makes sense. I mean, that's the kind of reaction you would have, right, that it could disperse crowds, because if something that your body is yelling, this is bad for me.
Right, without necessarily the more adverse reactions one encounters with, like, tear gas and the like.
Rubber bullets.
Rubber bullets.
Yeah. And I was actually thinking about this, too, in terms of my own personal experiences with getting ill. And this doesn't happen every single time, but it's more likely than not that a couple days before I get ill, I will have a dream, mm-hmm. actually. And in the dream, I have to use the bathroom, but the only bathroom that's available to me is one that's a public restroom.
Okay.
And as soon as I walk in it, I realize that is the most disgusting public restroom I have ever been in. It's feces encrusted everywhere. Ugh. Like, you could not touch something that's clean if you tried. And in the dream, I always look down and I'm barefoot and there's a stream of urine and phlegm and everything that you could possibly.
Phlegm?
Yeah. Seriously, if you've ever seen Trainspotting, it makes that bathroom and Trainspotting look really spick and span. But this is, and I always have this dream and I always wake up and I go, oh, and I have had it so much that it's obvious to me now that I'm about to get sick and it's my body trying to tell me something. But it wasn't until we were doing this research that I realized that just what a big signal my mind and body were trying to transmit to me.
Wow. Have you tried hitting that scenario with any lucid dreaming ever?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I can lucid dream most of the time, but uh-huh. it's always, it happens.
Like, if you ever decided, like, I'm going to clean this bathroom, you turn into, like, cleaning Superwoman and you just spiff it all
up. No, because what happens is the way it unfolds is that I am, I look down and my feet are now, you know, in the muck.
Oh.
And so I have no choice. I can't turn back. It doesn't matter. I'm exposed is the point of the dream.
Okay.
So because sometimes I thought, oh, really? Seriously? Can I just go to another restroom? But it's too late. But there you go. So, I mean, these are all things, you know, feces, whatever else is hiding away in that public restroom that portend potential disease and illness, right? Those are
right.
the things that we look at and we have such a strong reaction to.
And even in the animal world, I mean, anyone who's had a pet, I mean, granted, if you have a dog, it does seem at times like a dog is disgusted by nothing. But even dogs will occasionally encounter something where they're like, they're visibly not wanting any of it. They may not actually smirk their face up, but they will move away from it. They will kind of see it in their ears.
Right, right. And, you know, certainly in my cat, I've seen, you know, him do that, back mm-hmm. off on things. And especially, like, if it's chemical, too.
Yeah.
He seems to have a problem with that, which is pretty good.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will get into OCD.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
All right, we're back. Obsessive compulsion disorder, right?
Yep.
How does that tie in with the whole disgust scenario?
Okay, well, just so everybody knows, this is something that affects about 3.3 million people between the ages of 18 and 54 in the United States alone.
And the classic example that's often thrown around is the like someone who compulsively washes their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Like their hands cannot, I mean, they're basically Lady Macbeth because their hands never feel completely clean.
So. Exactly. So in the context of disgust, researchers were interested to see how people with OCD dealt with things that were disgusting for mm-hmm. those people. And in a study by the University of Florida's Evelyn F. and William L. McKnight Brain Institute, researchers compared the reactions of 8 people with contamination preoccupation, OCD, okay, mm-hmm. so a lot of hand washing, with a group of healthy adults to a set of 30 pictures that had been rated in terms of emotional impact. So the pictures that we're talking about had a series of threatening, disgusting, or neutral images like snakes bearing their fangs, scary, yeah. flies on pumpkin pie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's gross.
Yeah. yeah.
What?
Did you just swat it away? okay, see, we have different disgust-o-meters, right?
Yeah, right I do not like flies landing on my food.
I figure, like, you know, it's kind of one of those things you drop the food on the floor, 3-second rule, same thing with a fly. I mean, I'm going to probably still eat it. Okay. All right, and the other picture they had was a picture of a sunset. Lovely, right?
Yeah.
And then they had MRI scans of their brains, and researchers found that pictures that induced fear or disgust prompted reactions in different parts of the brain in both groups of participants, but the level of stimulation in certain areas of the brain prompted by the disgusting images was greater with people with OCD. Or greater for people with OCD. And this is really interesting, too. The areas of the brain most affected by these images included those that process unpleasant taste and smells.
Hmm.
So the difference suggests that obsessive people driven to behaviors like constant hand washing may be motivated by their extreme sensitivity to disgust and not, as commonly thought, by their fear of some sort of awful outcome if they were to stop washing their hands.
Okay. So it's not just, it's not a, like a conscious thing, like I have to wash my hands or I'm going to catch the plague. It's tied up on a much more primal level.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I found that absolutely fascinating, because you think about OCD and you think about hand washing and you think about it as some sort of crazy prevention method. Mm-hmm. But in fact, it is that they're having this reaction that's so heartfelt that, you know, they're overreacting to the stimuli in front of them.
Right, which is why, I mean, it's like you're not going to talk somebody out of OCD. You're not going to be able to reason them out, because it's not coming from a seat of reason. You know, you're not going to be able to say, like, well, logically, you're washing your hands too much and you're actually doing more damage to your skin, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's not going to
Well, especially if your amygdala, too, is having such an overreaction.
Right.
I mean, these are things that are going on undercover that you don't even know. So mm-hmm. it's not like you could, I mean, I guess unless you're some sort of Zen master, maybe you could step back and, you know, dial down your brain waves there. But most likely, you know, this is something that you can't necessarily control.
All right. Now, when one thinks of, like, disgust reactions, especially to smell, instantly think of pregnant women.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's just one of those things. It's like, if anyone who has been pregnant or has a pregnant friend, there's the whole thing about, like, suddenly, like, it'll be like something like garlic will totally set some people off. And they're like, they can't even be in the same room with somebody who just had breadsticks.
It's true. Yeah, you get very sensitive to it very quickly.
Did you find this to be the case?
I did, yeah. Not the entire time, but certain times where I was just like, oh, man. And my husband would be like, what are you smelling? I'd be like, I don't know, like 30 yards away, someone just had some bok choy with some with some ginger and curry, and the curry is just really very pungent.
Oh, I thought you were going to be like, the bok choy is the culprit. Because bok choy doesn't really smell like anything.
You know, after it's cooked, though, it's quite buttery, and it kind of smells buttery.
Yeah. Yeah, it does have a buttery odor. Yeah.
But even things that really weren't offensive, I was just picking up on them. And sometimes things that weren't offensive became inoffensive. But this is because what they found is that pregnant women have elevated levels of progesterone.
Yeah, now this is a steroid hormone involved in the female menstrual cycle, pregnancy, mm-hmm. and embryogenesis of humans and other species. So that's why the levels are up, obviously, during pregnancy.
Yeah, and particularly in the first trimester, mm-hmm. when derailing fetal development usually could occur most often during the first trimester. So that's when a woman's sensors would be sort of ferreting out what might be dangerous for her to consume.
Like
that's the idea.
An easy example of this is, of course, the cat box. Like everyone knows, like pregnant ladies don't mess with cat boxes because of the whole toxo issue.
Toxoplasmosis, yeah.
And of course, toxoplasmosis—that's an interesting topic unto itself, which we may have to get into at another time. But obviously, pregnant ladies should avoid the cat box. So it would make sense that with the body would on some level use the logic of, well, she shouldn't go near the cat box. So mm-hmm. let's make the cat box extra stinky, mm-hmm. just to hinge the bet, you know, just to make sure.
Yeah, and didn't you tell, and I know this is definitely something for another time, but you told me an interesting little fact about toxoplasmosis, that the little critters, what they do with the cat's mind and the urine,
mm-hmm.
wasn't it something sort of...
There's a lot of fast... I did some research on it a year or two back for an Animal Planet tie-in, and there's all sorts of crazy research on how it alters the behavior of animals, but also people,
mm-hmm.
Like making rats and mice crave the smell of cat urine so that it'll basically steer the mouse toward the belly of a cat so mm-hmm. it can complete its life cycle and can potentially generate or stir up risk-taking behavior even in human males. It's fascinating. We'll have to go into
it.
Yeah,
so,
later,
I mean, right? That brings me back to the podcast that we did about guts, mm-hmm. gut flora and how a lot of our behavior is dependent on the bacteria that we have in there.
But it's an example just on the whole idea of, like, cat pee. There's an example of, on one hand, the body making it, tinkering with our disgust reactions to steer one away from the cat urine. And then on the other level, you have a parasite hijacking a rat's natural repulsion by that smell
mm-hmm.
and making it move towards it because it the parasite needs the animal to be eaten by a cat.
That's just amazing.
Yeah.
That smell could just, you know, waft off and say, come to me.
Yeah.
Consume me, rat. But let's talk a little bit more about disgust from a cultural perspective.
Yes. So obviously humans have a way of taking things that are sort of natural, you know, that are just a natural process of our bodies. We add a couple of layers of reasoning and faulty reasoning and cultural norms on top of that, and things quickly get out of control. So we end up attaching disgust to things that aren't really disgusting. It ends up getting tied up in our politics, even certainly in our moral views of the world.
Yeah, this is really interesting. Curtis, the disgustologist, was talking about a survey that she did in different countries to find out what people found disgusting in those countries. And she uncovered some interesting cultural peculiarities. For example, food cooked by a menstruating woman was a frequent cause of disgust in India.
Oh,
again, yes. Sympathetic mm-hmm. magic here, right?
Right.
Like, okay, I'm assuming that it was assumed that if they ate this food that was cooked by a menstruating woman, that maybe they would, their masculinity would be downgraded. I'm not sure. Or there's maybe just such disgust in that culture with that particular part of the body.
I mean,
not being in that culture.
Right. I mean, because on one level, yes, you would not want someone who is physically ill cooking your food
mm-hmm.
for obvious reasons. So if you end up creating this fallacy that the menstruating woman is unclean, then it makes a twisted kind of sense that you would not want them cooking for you. But again, a twisted kind of sense that emerges from our human complication of all things biological.
But it's funny because even if someone went to use the bathroom and then cooked your food,
mm-hmm.
right, there's still this idea that you could bring some sort of contaminant from that atmosphere. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, I could see how maybe some of this is this idea that menstruating women are unclean, but so are people who just use the bathroom.
Yeah,
right. You know, with the same logic there. But also Curtis uncovered that apparently the Dutch thinks that fat people are disgusting too. So it just kind of differs in each culture.
Well, here's something I do find disgusting that kind of falls into this weird territory. And that is people talking on the phone in the bathroom.
That I think is just bad form.
Yeah.
And I will say that if someone is doing that, I will belch as loudly as I can, because I feel like this is some sort of place that a retreat that I could actually go and use the bathroom and not feel bad about it, because it's a bathroom.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but there was an individual that works for this company
mm-hmm.
that was talking on the phone while very audibly going number two in the men's room, and it was weird. Like who are you? Do you either A, are you just so are you A, so confident that the other person on the other line is not going to hear any of these sounds? Or B, do you just not care? Like, is it not that important enough of a contact?
I don't know how I feel about that. Like, do I admire that or am I kind of slightly disgusted? I mean, that's got a lot of chutzpah.
Yeah.
You know, to sit down and do that.
And then, I mean, how would you react if you heard somebody go, I mean, I think David Sedaris had a bit about this, like talking to his sister and finding out that she had been talking while going to the bathroom, and that if anyone, what she would do is just pretend that she was opening a jar. If she had to audibly strain, she would just be like, oh, just a second, I've got to get this jar. And that would be her way of explaining away from it.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2.
Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
But then it also reminds me to keep the comedy train going here. I remember a Kids in the Hall skit where it came out that like there was a an all male board meeting and they're going over some sort of product reviews or something, and they're reading one of these reviews, and then one of the individuals notices the like a weird smile on the guy who wrote its face,
mm-hmm.
and he realizes, oh, did you write this naked? And then everyone just feels kind of dirty for it. Which I think is, it's a ridiculous extreme comedy example, but it does illustrate a lot of the complexity of our repulsion to things, you know, because the idea that somebody wrote something naked that's so far removed from anything that could potentially, I mean, it doesn't tie into the mating disgust, the moral disgust, mm-hmm. really, and certainly not the disease disgust. But you could see, like, it makes enough sense where you could imagine somebody finding it. Repulsive.
Well, I mean, certainly there are some Victorian ideas about nudity, right, mm-hmm. that could, you know, make someone think about or be repulsed by nudity. I mean, certainly Freud had ideas about sex and the repulsion behind it. And, you know, again, there's this idea of illness and disease that could be transmitted through sex. So,
right.
Again, sympathetic magic, right?
Right.
You're naked, all of a sudden you write something and that's going to transfer the clap.
I will say that in the last year, How Stuff Works has relaxed its teleworking program somewhat. Mm-hmm. So you have more people working from home, more people writing from home, and invariably more people writing naked. So there are probably more articles on How Stuff Works than ever before written by naked people. And it's... It fortunately, like I say, nothing will actually come of that.
I'm just thinking about everybody on their smartphones right now who are looking up related articles and now feeling maybe a little bit dirty.
Yeah. I wonder how many of our listeners are naked right now. You don't have to tell us.
You don't have to.
But,
that's fine.
But, I mean, some of them are going to sleep. Some people sleep naked. It's just how it goes.
It's true. They do. Okay. So.
So, yeah, we kind of got off the subject then.
It is cultural, though. And although... Some people say that we have this encoded, hardwired in us, mm-hmm. right, to ferret out disgust, and it's to our advantage to do so. But Paul Rosen, he's a psychologist who is at the University of Pennsylvania, and he's considered a pioneer of modern disgust research, carried out his own survey on things people found disgusting and discovered that causes of death rated the highest amongst his North American subjects.
Really? Like even things like a sword would be disgusting? Because a sword is like the least disgusting.
I think it's pretty
undisgusting.
Yeah, well, I mean, it can be. I mean, it could have little bits of brain hanging off of it.
Well, even that's more awesome than disgusting. You know?
I agree. Yeah. But I think he means that there are probably instances of disgust that could lead to death,
okay.
right? As opposed to just being like, oh, you know, stepping back and being for a moment out of joint about it. And he says that anything that reminds us we are animals elicits disgust. Disgust functions like a defense mechanism to keep human animalness out of awareness.
Okay. So things like, for instance, the cloaca bot. That we know and love.
Yes.
Like the thing that makes that art installation brilliant is that it does kind of force you to think about your own biological functions and what that means.
Yeah, and just to refresh everybody's memory, this is the cloaca bot that I can't remember. Vim?
Yeah,
Anderson,
he's Belgian.
Maybe. Something along this line.
Lives in China now.
Okay, so this is the artist, and he had the cloaca bot, and he had, during the installation, a chef feed the bot 3 times a day, and then he would add certain little chemicals that would mimic digestion.
Yeah, it would like travel through, like, I think 6 different tanks and then come out the other end onto a little conveyor belt.
And it would be stone cold poo.
Yeah.
So, again, you're talking about the disgust element there. And one of the articles we read said that the little girl seeing this contraption in this really sterile environment started crying. So, you know, we all have different reactions to this.
All right. Well, let's call over our sterile, totally non-disgusting robot to bring us some hygienic mail to read.
Yeah, we do not feed that robot three times a day and then give it chemicals to pretend like it's going to do its thing. Just for the record.
Cool. Well, here's one. I heard from a listener by the name of Steven. Steven writes in, and you know, I'm not even sure which podcast he's responding to because it was kind of a tangent, I think. But he says, "I was actually near my computer to write this up when I finally caught up with some older back episodes I didn't have time to listen to. Thai Red Bull is terrifying. I did a study abroad in Chiang Mai in 2001, and after a couple guys got back from Christmas vacation in the islands, they introduced us to a truly horrific cocktail. In a pitcher of ice, add one bottle of Mekong whiskey, two cans of Coke, and two bottles of Thai Red Bull. I usually stuck to beer, but it was a recipe for disaster for my compatriots. Tons of energy and way too few inhibitions. Not to mention the rumors that Mekong whiskey is not fit for sale in the U.S. for human consumption due to a number of questionable additives." Huh, I did not know that. I had some Mekong whiskey when
you
I was
did.
There. Yeah. If you're not drinking beer in Thailand, like the other big drink, it's like a Coke, like a whiskey and Coke kind of a thing. And like some of the, like I remember reading, like in some bars, you go to the bar with your whiskey bottle. And they serve you Coke and ice and a little seltzer water in it. But you get to use your own whiskey. I guess there's like a corking fee. I can't remember the detail on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes if you don't drink it all, they will keep it for you. And you come back, they'll put your name on it. You come back and you get it the next night. So So it's like I'm not a beer drinker, and that's like it was a real Thai drink. So I was like, oh, I should probably have that while I'm over there. I didn't know that it might have had questionable additives that could be doing who knows what. Stephen continues, "You can occasionally find those little glass bottles of rocket fuel in Southeast Asian grocery stores. I've had the Red Bull cans in China, and I can honestly say I'm not sure which is worse. It has enough caffeine to completely shut off a migraine, but I wouldn't be surprised if it also causes heart problems. Anyway, great job, always on the podcast, and I think I should be all caught up after this very slow day at work." So,
all right.
Yeah, yeah. I believe I put out a call. Like, has anyone else had an experience with Thai Red Bull? Because when I had one in Thailand, it was like crazy stimulating.
Yeah, I was about to say, we've heard from a few people, and the consensus seems to be that it's diabolical.
And then we have, another quick one here. This is from a listener by the name of Stevie. Stevie writes in and says, "Hey, guys, I was just listening to your Neo Evolution podcast where the end you made reference to the 999 Candles podcast, and it got me thinking. If we did genetically mutate ourselves or have the ability to replace parts over the years so we could live this long, do you think women would have the reproductive capabilities to last longer than 50 years until they reach menopause? Just a thought on all of this. I mean, if we replaced our reproductive organs over the years, I'm not sure those eggs would end up being our own, maybe a genetically engineered version. But how would this affect the offspring we have with them in the future? Thought this was something good to chew on. Keep on casting your pods. Love the show."
Cool. Yeah, that's an interesting proposition, and certainly I would think that on the horizon would be something like a uterine replicator.
Yeah, I mean, it's like our friend Aubrey de Grey.
The bearded one,
like to, you know, point out, it's like a car. The human body has all these parts. They wear down either due to use or abuse, and the idea is to better maintain the vehicle, which at times might mean replacing parts.
Right, and it also may mean that procreation gets moved to the lab in some instances. So, that's food for thought for another podcast, I believe.
Yeah, in fact, maybe one we're going to record next. We kind of touched on it, I think, in the one we're going to record next. Stevie, thanks for the thoughts. I love it when people take topics we bring up in one podcast and combine them with another and start mixing it together. I mean, that's what the whole podcast is really about stirring up the old mind juices and seeing what pops to the surface.
And keeping them in your head, because otherwise the juices
well, keep them
might
in your
leak
head,
out
but express
and
them.
People.
Express them, by all means.
Oh, yeah, express them through the mighty pen.
Yeah, exactly.
Keyboard.
So, hey, if you want to share something with us, where can you find us? Well, you can find us on Facebook. We are Stuff to Blow the Mind on there. And, we have a wall We put photos on the wall. We put videos. We put links to what we're doing, streams of the podcast, all sorts of good stuff. And then we also have a Twitter account, which is Blow the Mind.
And, hey, we would love to hear from you via email. And particularly, we'd love to find out what your pet disgust is. So send us a letter. Let us know via blowthemind@discovery.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.